This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just delight in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Well, 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 welcome back to another episode, guys. As we're chipping away through the month of March, I'm thinking about a lot of things as far as warming up in springtime. And that's a catch-22 because as much as I loved the fact that we had some warmer weather last week or whenever that was, and it kind of made me want to get outside and do a whole bunch of stuff, I'm also not ready in a lot of cases. There's still a lot of things that I felt like I wanted to cross off the bucket list for winter before we got into spring. And, you know, as this episode drops, we're days away from the beginning of spring happening, and hopefully weather is going to switch. But I know this week I saw lows in the 20s, and it's kind of weird in March, but it is what it is. So wherever you are, hopefully you're getting ready for spring. You know, there's a lot of things that come in with spring. I'm thinking about food plots. I'm thinking about planting and preparations of the growing season. And, you know, I'm thinking about shooting my bow and doing things. And one of the things that I've talked about a little bit here and there on this podcast is just my overall physical health and wanting to be better. And the two things that motivate me in my mind to actually try, even though my physical action has not been as well, but the two things that stand out is, number one, my family, my kids are my motivation to try to take better care of myself so I can, you know, be the best self for them. And then number two is bow hunting. And this week's episode is a good conversation. I have Dan Sauble on the line, and we talk a lot about bow hunting and how bow hunting has just enriched our lives in so many ways. We talk about the ethics of bow hunting, but we talk about how daily life, it's been a struggle the older we get, how in order to be the best bow hunter we can be, sometimes it's looking a little bit more holistically at things and trying to keep yourself in better shape, whether it's what you eat, how you exercise, this and that. And I got to admit, you know, he and, you know, my buddy Andrew, you know, people that have just said and done things to try to motivate me, believe it or not, I actually, I went to the doctor here not that long ago, and this kills me to say it, I haven't been feeling myself, and I've been dealing with high blood pressure, and I know it's because I don't eat right. I'm not watching what I eat and exercising quite enough. And, you know, conversations with Dan on this podcast, conversations with my buddy Andrew, like, that was motivating to try to go to the doctor and maybe get some blood work done and figure out how can I, where's my standard of my health right now as far as maybe some blood work and tests and stuff, not just the physical aspect and feel, but what can I work towards in achieving a number? And it sounds silly, but you know what? It was actually motivating for me. And it was all because, some people that were at a position in their life that they didn't feel themselves, they didn't feel their best, and they wanted to do better because of their interests, and they used their interests to be their fuel. You know, it kind of helped me, and I'm hoping that's where this episode leaves you. It was a fun conversation with Dan. We had a lot of fun. He was a hoot to talk with about some of his bow hunting experiences and, highs and lows of bow hunting and those challenges we endure. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Guys, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. And one thing, if you could do me a favor, is please check out our sponsors. That would be Radix Hunting. Please check out Radix Hunting and the gear they have to offer. There's a lot of cool turkey hunting gear that I would recommend, and that comes along the series of the Monarch Blind series. Really quality blind, quality chairs, easy to use, quiet setup, and a pretty sleek setup. I enjoy that. Please check out Huntworth, the Durham Pants, and the Grayling hoodie. I believe the Grayling would be their lightweight too, but it's got a built-in face mask. Man, you could rock that and not need much of anything else, except when it gets real, real cold. Maybe you want to go with like a Sheldon hoodie that has heat boost or something like that. But their camo patterns are solid. The solid colors. I mean, I've worn brown Durham pants hunting constantly, and man, your bottom half in just the brown Durham is pretty sweet, and they're pretty sweet for just regular use, whether you're around the house or sometimes depending on your job, things like that. Check out Huntworth gear, and also Little Mountain Outfitters in Richland, Pennsylvania. Please check them out. Awesome archery shop, local knowledge, great bow shop. And you can go to littlemountainoutfitters.com and you can get you can support a local bow shop right from your computer screen or from your phone, what you purchase. And if you use the code Woodsman10, Woodsman10, you'll get 10% off of your next purchase from Little Mountain Outfitters. Hey, have a good week, guys. Finally, the first day that felt like spring, and here we are sitting in the evening, recapping a beautiful day, and I'm sitting here chatting with Dan Sauble. Dan, thanks for joining us on the show, man. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Mitchell. Appreciate it, man.
So for the people who don't see the video, because, you know, I'm still on the lazy side, and I don't post the entire video on YouTube and stuff. I just post shorts every now and then on stuff. So most of you, 99% of you that just listen to the audio podcast, that you can't see the shirt that Dan has on that says, "I've got 99 problems, but shooting does ain't one." Man, I preach, my man. Preach, my man. So I'm assuming that the freezer is filled after this past hunting season.
The freezer is full, not quite as full as the last 2 years. I think 2 years ago I shot 12 total. Last year I shot 13. This year I was down to 5. Mainly that was because I got a new buddy involved in hunting, so I was putting more time into him, trying to help him get involved. It was his second, basically first and a half year of bow hunting. So I kind of wanted to see him get a couple. And then my nephew, he just turned 13, and we took him out. He wanted to go out crossbow hunting a little bit. So we took him out and trying to put more time into them guys to help build them up and help see what they're doing and show them a couple things instead of just, you know, killing everything I can see between here in Maryland and South Carolina.
I can echo that. I mean, it's fun to involve people and fun to involve new people, have them experience the stuff that you've experienced. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what you're about.
Okay. I mean, on Instagram and YouTube, it's Mason Dixon Adventures. And I'd say probably in the last 2 to 3 years here, I started trying to film some hunts, self-film some hunts, and do a couple different things with that. And then through meeting some different people, a couple buddies, they're called Goat Rodeo Archery. They do a couple different events, trying to get ready for like Western hunting, mountain hunting. And, you know, here in Pennsylvania, you actually got some mountains probably where you're at. More or less here, we're flatlanders. So to try to do anything to get prepped for mountains or any type of elevation. So we do a lot of workouts, sandbag drags, burpees, push-ups, anything to get your heart rate up when you're shooting your bow. Cause, and I don't get 99 problems and shooting does ain't one. I don't care who tells you they don't get excited when they're shooting a deer, whether it's a doe or whether it's a 12 point. I mean, your heart gets to racing, and what do you got to do to prepare to make that shot? Cause it adds a little different element to it. You guys go out and shoot paper or shoot foam all day long, but until you get a live animal in front of you, no matter what it is, it takes on a whole different game, and just to be prepped and ready for that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, when I was younger, I could shoot very well on target, but man, I had many, many bouts of screwing up with the target animal in front of me. And sometimes it was not a very far distance. Some of the shots I've goofed up in my lifetime were just sheer due to the fact that I didn't execute a good shot in the process. And that was just pure excitement. Yeah. Now I'm having the other problem. And I wouldn't mind you kind of sharing this a little bit, like your experiences, but like me, I was telling you off air, you know, I'm at the point now where I feel pretty confident in executing a good shot, not being, anticipating the shot, you know, pulling through, having a surprise release on game. I've been pretty good about that. My new problem is just something that I can't fathom, is the fact that I'm not as strong as I used to be, because I'm not as active as I used to be, and I'm not lifting, and I'm not doing the things I should be doing. And, you know, for the first half of my archery hunting life, that didn't matter because I could still pick the bow up and I could shoot very well. Now I am noticing I don't hold as steady, and I fatigue a lot quicker, and I need to do something about it. You were talking about working out and doing stuff like, is that something you've always been involved in, trying to stay in shape and working out and stuff like that? Or was that provoked by some of the things I'm experiencing?
Well, it was part of what you're saying. Cause what I grew up working on a farm, grew up in construction. I mean, I was doing roofs and pole buildings the time I was 13. Then I got into welding and everything else, and you didn't work out. You didn't have to work out because everything you did was a workout. You were always ready to go. And then being in sports, playing baseball and stuff, I mean, you stay active, so everything is limbered up and doesn't get as tight. And then I'd say probably about 10 years ago, I went out of the field and into the office, and you hear about people getting office ass and this and that from coming out of the field. It hits you quick, and you start to realize that you ache a little bit, things turn sore, you ain't as flexible as you used to be, you can't do what you do. And I guess people say that's just part of getting older too. But so what really changed my mind was part of going in the office, and then secondary was in 2018 or 19, went on an elk hunt. And I decided, being from Pennsylvania, there's no good way for me to get in shape, so how can I do this? So I started doing push-ups and started lifting weights and started throwing sandbags or hay bales and dragging a truck tire up and down the driveway. Because everybody had told me, when you go out west, don't let your physical limitations be what stops you. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to screw it up, screw up the hunt, screw up the shot, but don't blame it on you're out of shape, you're too tired, this and that and everything else. So I started really focusing on, get in shape, and then looking at some supplements and looking at different things to take, like glucosamine, different things to keep your joints up. And once I started doing that, and plus, I mean, getting off of the concrete at the job sites over the years, that made one heck of a difference. And my knees were terrible. Mm. So just the fact of, and like running, I don't like to run. There's a lot of people that they'll run marathons, or they want to run, and that's just too much of a pounding for me for over the years. But just simple walking on the treadmill, putting the treadmill on the incline, and going for a half hour walk on that, everything started to like limber back up to where at 45 now, I feel better than I did at 20, 25, which I never would have thought, just from basically a half hour, 45 minutes of being active a day, whether that's taking a walk with a weighted pack on, or dragging the tire, or, just doing any kind of little bit of lifting or moving around. And then after that, started looking into, what can I do to help archery? What can what can help the archery muscles, the shoulders, the core and everything, and just focusing on those exercises and those movements has really, really helped me out quite a bit. And I'd be lying if I didn't tell you a sauna.
Wow.
I mean, what redneck has a sauna at their house?
I'm talking to.
I thought that's the damn bougie that we started looking into. Me and my wife started looking into things, and we were talking, you know, what's a hot tub? Everybody wants to get a hot tub. We started looking at this and doing the health benefits. And, you know, every time you go to the doctor, don't matter what you do, they tell you you got high blood pressure. They don't realize that just happens because of them. So looking at that and looking at the health benefits of it, we decided to get a sauna at the house. And I'm telling you, that makes one whale of a difference on the muscles, the tendons, and just keeping you loose. Like you're saying, like sometimes when you go to shoot and you're struggling, it might just be because you're tight. Like, can you loosen up enough to do it? And that I've noticed has made one heck of a difference.
You know, my biggest problem is between my ears at this point, because I've got a list of things that I have to do, want to do, and I allow those things to kind of blind me and come up with an excuse of time, right? And making time and putting a little time in. I do think that doing something is better than nothing, but it is intimidating when I think about how life gets away. You allow life to get away. You get going with the hustle and bustle of work and life and this and that and running here and running there and doing this and doing that. And like, here I am, I'm in my early 30s, and I stepped on the scale the other day. I'm like, well, I'm not the heaviest I've ever been, but man, I'm not in good shape, and I should really, really do something about it. But I look at what I'm doing right now on a day-to-day basis, and man, sometimes it's a challenge to motivate myself to get a little bit of time in there. So I guess my question, Dan, at your age, which you're still young and got a lot of hunts in, but you got a little bit of seasoned on me, I guess. So my question to you is, what keeps you motivated? How do you stay motivated in that mindset?
It's tough. I'm not going to lie. It's tough. There's days like, what was it? Friday, I had to replace our furnace. And then Saturday, we did the AC part of it. So that was, I mean, I haven't done that in a good 12, 15 years. And I forgot how bad that is, up, down, kneeling, bending. And I was like, I need to take a walk. I need to go do a walk. I can't get a lift in today. I shouldn't say I can. I probably could have, but just, you know, what can I do today for something? And just taking that that half hour, that 40 minutes, it does seem, I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, it's always like there should be another hour or two in the day to get stuff done. But just prioritizing. And the easiest thing for me is that first, I know a lot of guys like to do it. My lights are going to keep going off. I don't know if you can tell or not. I got motion sensor.
You're good.
yeah, if I'm waving my arms, that's what it is. But no, I mean, like, it is a, like, some people do it in the mornings, like, get up and do something first thing in the morning. I got a buddy, that crazy son of a gun, he'll run 2-3 miles every morning, 4:35 o'clock. And I'm like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I've tried it. I know everybody says, oh, you'll feel great. I think that's to each his own. Mm-hmm. I need to get up at 4:30, get in the truck and be on my way to work. And then from there, it's almost like at the end of the day, I need to do something to release. I mean, there's always something to do. If it's this needs fixed or that needs welded or the tractor happened to this, or, you know how it goes. I mean, just things pile on. It does overwhelm you. But I'd say I put more of a focus on that. Like, this is my wind down time. I got a half hour, 45 minutes. I'm going to do this and then we'll go. And it took a lot of practice and a lot of dedication to do it. But at this point, it's almost like if I don't do that type of stuff, I don't feel right. My mind ain't right. And my body don't feel right. And I can tell when I push it or overdo it. And this is going to sound stupid, but the other, like, two major things besides that was eating breakfast. eating breakfast and getting a solid, 7 hours of sleep. Because working in construction, I jump out of the truck or jump out of bed, jump in the truck, maybe grab something at the gas station, but we wouldn't eat till 10, 11 o'clock. And during COVID, what changed all that, we had to change our work schedules up. We were able to work remotely and from home from some things and just got in the habit of eating breakfast. And at that point it was like, man, I feel so much better. And because it wasn't eating like ding dongs and ho-hos. It was, throw some eggs and throw some sausage. And cause I'm still not one that I've tried to count this and count that and look at this and look at that. And I'm like, no, if you're eating what you're growing or you're eating what you're killing, you'll be all right.
Yeah. Somebody told me one time, if the good Lord put it on the earth, then it's worth eating. And if he didn't, then it's not worth eating. And that's as easy as you can make it. And there's a lot of different philosophies out there. I'm definitely no food and health expert. I just know that it's prioritization for me. Like you were talking about getting up early. Like, I don't mind getting up early. What gets me is if I go a couple mornings of getting up between 4 and 5 o'clock and being active, I can do that. But the minute that my kids kind of throw my schedule off, and when I go to bed and have a routine, it gets harder and harder to get my rear end up at that time. And I'm not blaming them. It's just the reality of, it's just hard to have consistency. And I often wonder, like, at the point in my life where I'm at, will I be able to get any normalcy in a routine on a day to day with the job I have and with the family I have? And some people they can, some people they can't. And I have no idea where I'm going to land, but I think, I use a lot of excuses, and I think a lot of people do. I don't think I'm alone in that. And I guess I'm trying to make myself feel a little bit better. I would like to do better. And I think about, conversations I had with some of my buddies, and just pick one thing and focus on it. And like you said, go for a walk, doing little things like that. I used to get so hyper-focused on, for lack of a better way, shooting a big buck. And I would never put two and two together how going for a walk, sitting in a sauna, doing any of that is going to be better for Mitchell, and it's going to make my hunt more enjoyable. I would have never thought about that, but it's true.
No, I'm telling you, and I got a feeling we're about the same ram-assiness. 100 mile an hour, everything needs done right now. You got to do it. You got to get it done. And then something pops up and you're constantly putting fires out. And I let that dictate me for, probably from 20 to 35. Everything had to be perfect. If it wasn't perfect, I'd have a fit. Something went wrong, it'd be a big blow up. And I had pretty good temper for little things that would go wrong. And until I, just focus on it and be like, take a look around, take a deep breath. Could it be this bad? Like, what could go wrong next? And I mean, how it goes. Like, one day it's the washing machine dies, and the next day the truck battery dies, and the next day the electric goes out for 2-3 days and this and that, and it just keep piles on and piles on. And it takes a lot of, back to old wrestling terms, but it takes a lot of testicular fortitude to just calm down, take a step back and look and be like, man, this is what I need to do. This is what's going to go on. And it's still hard, every day to prioritize and focus. And I don't have kids, but I can just imagine that compounds it a little bit. And I don't think you're making excuses at all. I mean, I just think that's the way it is a lot of times. And it's tough to pull back from all that stuff.
So, man, we've been talking about physically making yourself better and how you enjoy life more and how it makes your bow hunting better. But I'm curious too, you've been bow hunting for quite a long time, and I'm curious, when you think about the things that you have done in your bow hunting career that have made an impact, and I'm thinking, like, we're talking about exercising to make our life better. There's little things in the world of bow hunting that we learn in our journey that just makes massive gains and impacts on our ability to successfully shoot a bow and feel confident, you know, taking game with. And I'm wondering, what are some of the things that's really impacted you to be a better archer, better bow hunter?
One, the respect we owe to the animals to put a clean shot on and make it a clean ethical kill. Because a lot of bow hunters get a bad rap for being a bow hunter. Because when I was growing up, my whole family was rifle hunters. And I've shot over 50 deer and 12, 13 hogs with a bow. I have never actually killed anything with a rifle, which is a big shock for growing up here in Pennsylvania. It wasn't my thing. And I think what did that was just, you know, because my dad had told me, he said, we don't want you bow hunting. We see them run around the farm. These guys can't shoot. They're wounding them. They run around with arrows in. It's not possible. And kind of like, you know, if you're going to do it, you better get good at it. So just putting in a lot of time to do that and focus on that. And also it's just, like the archery community is, it's a special community. I mean, when you're at the bow shop or when you're at a 3D shoot with somebody, and you'd be surprised the amount of guys that are willing to help you and tell you, hey, if you try this or try that, hold here, hold there, do this, do that. It really helps out. And then, like I've done a couple, what I said, the goat rodeo competitions. So what they are, it's a 3D course, but then you're doing physical activity in between. You're doing, you might run, you might drag some sandbags, you might, do a hold test where you can hold for somebody just shot now. But, if you do a hold for 4 or 5 minutes and then you had full draw, or pull back in 10 seconds and let that arrow fly, it's just preparing you for more of the real world stuff that's going on.
You know, you're talking about owing it to the animal. Well, I find it very interesting how things have shifted in the round what is ethical and what is not in the world of bow hunting. Like, that has really changed in the last 10 years. And I have a hard time processing that because, you know, early on when I think about the people who came up, you know, the generation of when the compound bow became a thing, you know, late 70s, early 80s, and, you know, that was a big shift and a big push. And, like, there was people that, like, tried to foundationally set principles of what is ethical and what is not with a bow. And it kind of became, like, the foundation in archery. And then, you know, here in the last, I'd say, 10 years, there's more research, there's technology, there's information out there that challenges some of that. And it presents itself in the media in a way that I don't know how to process it. I'll give you an example. You know, the hot topic is arrow setup, right? And, you know, what's an ethical arrow setup and how do you take aiming into account with a certain arrow setup? And, you know, what's an ethical shot angle? And there's a lot of people that'll be controversial that distance. You know, that's a big thing. You know, there's a lot of really, really good archers out there that are shooting 60, 70, 80, 100 plus yards with a compound bow and killing stuff. And there's a lot of people that say that's not ethical. And, man, I have a really hard time saying that there's black and white in the ethics. But at the same time, there are some things that just overall frustrate me. So with the foundation you just said about what's ethical, like, how do you feel we are as bow hunters today? Do you think we're more ethical now than ever before? Or has it gotten worse?
I don't think we're more ethical. I think, like you said, it's more of a topic of conversation. It's more of a social media driven thing. And truthfully, an ethical shot for you, for me, for different hunts, different animals, different situations is completely different. Yeah. Because I've taken, so 2 years ago, I shot 13 deer. They were all within 20 yards. So you would think, yeah, they're all ethical shots. No, no. I had one that was quartered away so hard, I shot almost right up the hind quarter and came out the front. Deer didn't go far, but was it an ethical shot? No. Did I kill it? Was it quick and clean? Yeah, but it wasn't an ethical shot. I mean, I think that's in the eye of the beholder and in the situation you're in. Like this year, I shot the three buck I shot this year, two in Maryland and one in Pennsylvania. They were all 44 yards. And I would not call that an ethical shot, depending on the situation, depending on how that animal's reacting, what's going on around you, and then your own, how do you feel? Because you could shoot 60 yards and how's that animal reacting? It depends on the situation. And I think even like rifle hunting, anything, boy, there's a lot of shooting.
There is. I can hear that. Those shots now, man, you really are down in Redneckville, aren't you?
I hope they're getting some coyotes or foxes at this point, man. sorry about that, but
no, you're fine. You know,
yeah. No, I think that like an ethical shot, it depends on the situation. You could have a 10-yard shot that might not be ethical. I mean, I had one this year that the deer was at 3 yards, and.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
That was too close. I rushed a shot. Everything about it was unethical, which to me is, how do you make a 3-yard shot unethical but a 40-yard shot ethical? Like I said, I think it just depends on the situation and your shooting skills and everything else. Because I know one thing that me and my buddies do and we talk about is, yeah, we're shooting 60, 80 yards for practice. And that makes your effective range a third of that. Think of that when you're doing it and when you're shooting. And like I said, what's that animal doing? Because, you know, a lot of times they can be very tense or very calm. And that to me, that changes the game too, and what's called ethical. And I think that's just each person. So when you're saying you're struggling with how to define that and look at it, you ain't alone.
You know, I heard someone say once that really put it into good perspective that people love to judge how well you shoot and the decisions you make of what's an ethical shot by how poorly they shoot. So like I remember one time, you know, back when I used to shoot a lot and was pretty good, you know, shooting a deer at 35 yards at one time was a long shot. And I remember my dad telling a guy that he worked with at archery hunted that I shot a doe at like 34 yards. And man, he raked me over the coals because I shot that far. And I was just like baffled that was the case. And yet, one of the things I struggle with now in this day and age is really, really harsh angles where some of the heaviest bones in the animal's body are blocking the majority of the vitals. And it's just a low percentage shot. And, you know, it goes back to, I can't judge how accurately, you know, Dan might be, you know, a 10-ring shooter all day, and even though you've got a very small margin of error, that deer's 20 yards, and you got a small margin of error where to hit, you might be able to hit that. The problem, I think, for me is not that you can make that shot and I can't. The problem that I have is, in the world of content and social media, anybody can take anything and run with it out of context. I'll give you an example. Yeah. I just had a conversation with one of my clients in the farming world. We were talking about how some of the information that's out there about new farming practices or high-intensive management farming practices are coming from the Midwest on different climates and different soils. Some of them apply to Pennsylvania. Some of them do not. But the problem is that you have people making decisions off of that information without the full picture and what we have. You take that into the world of bow hunting, you know, you put out there a video of shooting a deer really, really hard quartered too, and you make a decent shot, maybe a little bit marginal, but you get the deer. And what's the first thing people talk about? They talk about how awesome their broadhead is. They talk about how awesome their arrow set is, how awesome their bow is. And my problem with that is it gives the belief to a new bow hunter that's not shooting as well that, oh, all I got to do is shoot that gear or that setup, or this guy knows what he's talking about, and I'm going to be able to do the same thing. And that's how we have bad decisions being made. So I get really fired up when somebody shoots a deer, and my favorite one, I'm on a tangent, Dan, you need to stop me. I'm sorry. One of my biggest pet peeves is when somebody shoots a deer slightly quartered towards and they hit it, you know, basically right above the armpit where, you know, you've got the humerus meeting the scapula, and there's a V there where there's no bone. And it's like most people would think if you went straight up that leg bone, it's just all solid bone there. And that's not the case. There's a pocket there where there's no bone. And I've seen people zip through at that spot. The deer goes 30 yards. It never touched bone. And the deer piles up. And the first thing they turn and say is, I blew right through that shoulder. Well,
yep.
Okay. So the shoulder, there's muscle associated with the shoulder. So technically, you're not wrong, but people think that they're shooting through the ball and socket on that, and I personally have not experienced that. So that's a tangent I have about the ethics of bow hunting and the perception we have.
Yep, and that's funny you say that, because I shot one this year, 42 yards, quartered to me. He was coming in. As soon as I shot, I knew the whole setup seemed bad to me. As soon as I shot, shot felt perfect. Deer ran 5 feet to the left, turned around, took off and ran 70 yards. I saw him drop. I shouldn't say I saw him drop. I assumed he dropped because of the way the creek bed laid down. So I get down, go take a look. Arrow was half busted off because it went in, hit that spot like you're saying, hit the clear spot, and hit the opposite side of the shoulder, so it didn't come out. Mm-hmm. So I had no blood, I had full penetration, but no blood. And I got down, checked everything out, called my buddy. He goes, give it 6 to 8 hours. He said, I was videoing it at the time, and I sent him the video, and he goes, well, you blew through the shoulder. And I said, no, the way he was standing, it actually went in front of the main scapula and hit the other one, but sure, whatever. Yeah, I blew through the shoulder. Great. Waited 6 hours, got out and drove around, went and got something to eat, come back, went to where I thought the deer was. Now this deer went 70 yards, not a drop of blood, because there was no exit wound, and it just all was filling up inside the deer. That thing was so stiff from rigor mortis, it was dead 3 seconds after I shot it. And I mean, you want to talk about what do you learn from bow hunting? Patience. And patience is not a virtue for me. I mean, most times I'll be down that tree before the arrow hits the deer, and I'm already chasing that thing, whether it's going to fall down or I'm going to run him to death, just because that's my level of patience. But that took a lot for me this year to do that. And I'm about the same way on quartering away shots as you are on the quartering till, because if you show somebody a video or show them a picture, the first thing they say is, oh, well, nice gut shot. I'm sure that deer suffered. Well, anybody that, and normally it's not people that know what they're talking about that are saying it. It's just other people that are throwing out their 2 cents and makes everybody else look bad that, oh, you shot it in the guts. Well, yeah, because I was aiming for the exit, not the entrance.
Exactly.
I mean, I had a buddy just couple weeks ago, he put a video back out on YouTube, and same thing. He got 50 comments about, oh, nice gut shot. Well, you don't know how hard that deer was quartered. It wound up being perfect shot.
Absolutely. It happens all the time. And it is kind of wild that so many people don't know and understand anatomy. And I'll be honest with you. I learned anatomy a whole lot more when I was a teenager and was butchering my own deer. When you butcher your own deer and you break an animal down and you can see where every little nook and cranny is of the animal and how bones lay out and the muscle groups and where organs are and stuff, if you pay attention to that stuff, it will make you a better hunter. It'll make you focus on things. There's certain things that you think, I'm probably not going to get away with this. This is a low percentage shot. And then I've seen the opposite too, where people are like, there's no way you're going to make that shot. Well, you have a bigger window than you think if you know where to aim.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing too, that I see a lot of guys struggle with. Everybody looks and they want to shoot the heart. Well, in bow hunting, you've got the pie plate lung, and it's a lot. I've had deer run 150, 200 yards that were hard shot, and it was a perfect shot. And I very rarely put a perfect shot on, because people that are going to tell you that you said about 10 ringing all day long. My best shots are when I don't aim, when it's instinct, when I just pull up, don't think about the shot, let it go. And it hits, just your mind goes blank and you hit where you want to hit. When I start thinking about the shot and trying to focus on it, that's when I make a gut shot, or that's when I make a liver shot. So the biggest thing I've found too is, you know, just the one drill I do a lot of times is, if you don't shoot in 5 seconds, put the bow down. Draw back, and if you don't shoot in 5 seconds, you ain't confident enough in the shot, don't take it.
I definitely think there's something to know about the more you shoot and understanding how you are as a shooter. Like, I'm somebody that I don't mind holding a little bit longer because it takes me a little bit longer until I get set in. So, you know, a deer comes in and it might not be giving me a shot present yet. And I'll draw back and get settled, because I'll take my time to anchor. I don't want to be rushing to anchor and then settle, aim, and then shoot. And there's other people that they'll wait until the shot presents itself, draw back, and I think as quick as they draw back, they're on and they shoot. And that all comes back to shooter. I don't know if you can describe it anymore, because I think the way you described it, I understand what you're saying, but I think it's hard to understand too. So when you're talking about letting instinct take over. So like, to a new bow hunter, or to anybody who's, you know, semi-experienced, that doesn't make any sense. Like, how do you let instinct take over to make a best shot and you're not focusing on aiming? Like, what exactly does that mean to you in your mind, in your terms?
The repetitiveness. Once you shoot enough times, I know a lot of guys will do the blind bail exercise where they shoot, just pull back, shoot, don't focus on nothing, and try to, I don't know, like Caddyshack, be the ball, be the ball, be the ball. Well, yeah, okay, that works for some people, but I think if you shoot enough arrows and you know in your own abilities where you're at, but like you said, me, I would love to be able to do what you do and pull back and wait and focus. But once I do that, I start to get pin flowed. I start to question, where am I going to put it? Where am I shooting? So I guess when I'm saying instinct, it's your first instinct is to go up that leg, go a third of the body, go a little bit to the right of the leg, and let it go. After that, the more you get in your own head, the worse shot you're going to put out, at least from my perspective. Overthink it.
Yeah, overthinking is definitely where it gets you. And for me, like, I overthink when I make a mistake and then I can't figure out how to fix it. Like, that was my biggest problem for the longest time. Like, my biggest problem as an archery hunter early on was deer duck in the string. I was aiming too much in the middle of the body, and I had the worst problem of I wasn't shooting over their back, unfortunately. In fact, I can honestly say to you, I think in all the deer I've ever shot at with my bow, which is a lot, I think I've only ever missed one over the top of its back one time. But I tell you what, I've hit a lot through the back straps and I didn't get them. And that's agonizing to wound a deer and not get it. And, you know, there, I've had some of the extreme too. I mean, I had one on film one time where if you looked where my pin was, it was barely above the brisket line. Like you would have thought it was perfect. And where I hit that deer, I hit it top of the spine and I never got the deer. He actually knocked him down. He got up and ran away and never got him. And it was one of those extreme cases where a deer ducked out of the way, gosh, a foot. I mean, and it's the extreme things happened, but that was a mental blockade that I really struggled to overcome. What are things that stand out to you that are some of the biggest challenges in trying to overcome and learn from in bow hunting?
I think target panic. I mean, that was a big one for me for the longest time. I just, for some reason, I draw back. It didn't matter if it was a piece of paper. I'd get to the point where I'm in my own head and I'm shaking and thinking. And then at that point, you just start punching. Mm. And to try to break that and get out of that, because I, there for a while, and I tried to basically outshoot it. Like, okay, I'm going to do as many reps as I can do here until I get a, till I get it back to where it needs to be. And that's the worst thing you can do when you're screwing up and you're doing anything wrong. And I like it to, I liken it to welding, stick welding pipe. If you are struggling, the worst thing you can do is just keep doing it. Like you've got to back away, put it down, walk away from it. Don't touch it for as long as you can get away without doing it. Cause I've taught guys how to weld pipe and it gets in their head that I just can't get this right. And the same thing happened to me with shooting. It was, you know, I kept trying and trying and trying. And I'm like, I just need to put the bow down, walk away, don't touch it, don't think about it, and pick it up and go again. Because I know there for a while we were shooting, trying to shoot every day. And that's a little extreme. I mean, it keeps the muscle memory up. But the other thing it does is it just enforces bad habits. Like people think the more you do it, the better you're going to get. A lot of times, the more you do it, the worse you're going to get.
If you have bad, you know, bad habits in the first place and you compound those bad habits, absolutely. Absolutely. And that, like I mean, you look at the best shooters in the world, they shoot all the time, but they've got it down pat. If you have a bad habit, you're going to have a problem.
And that is the easiest thing to do. And then the frustration sets in and then you're thinking, what am I doing? Why do I want to do this? Why do I keep doing this to myself? And it's just, it's a mental, it's a lot of mental, and clearing your head and being able to focus on things. And that takes a lot. I think a lot of people downplay that side of it, that, like you said, once you get something in your head, it's no matter what it is, whether it's bow hunting or if you're working, it's hard to do. It is really hard to do.
100%. I think bow hunting and most things in life, a lot of the time we are our own worst enemy. And I've been that way as a bow hunter and a lot of other aspects of my life.
Yeah, without a doubt. You said about farming and growing up farming and you said about Midwest and this and that. Well, I mean, one farm to the next up the road could have a different, you plowed that field one way for all these years and turn around, do it the other way, and it works out just because that's the way it is. Everything is different. It truly is.
100%. So what are you working towards right now as a bow hunter? Is continuing to fill the freezer and helping other people like you were sharing with this past season the biggest focus that you have? Or do you still have some trips and maybe bucket list type things that you want to accomplish with the bow in hand?
Oh, there's always bucket list stuff. But right now, and I never thought I'd get to this point. I always hear people talk about there's three stages of hunting, whether it's bow hunting and whether it's deer, ducks, geese, whatever it might be. It's you just want to fill a tag stage. You want to shoot anything that you can see. And then it's the point where you get to where you want to be a little more selective on things. And then it's where you get to where, what can you do for others and how can you help others? And I think I'm past the point where if it's brown, it's down. I mean, that part of the redneck will still jump out every now and then. But because, you know, at some point you sit there for so long and that fawn starts looking really good. But it was fun the last 2 years where I actually had deer on camera and that I seen and I said that I want to shoot that buck. I mean, this year, actually last year there was one and this year there was one where we had him on camera and I said, I'm going to hold out. I'm going to wait. Pennsylvania is a little harder because we only get the one buck tag. Mm-hmm. Maryland is a little more forgiving because you can shoot three. And that kind of brings back the old redneck a little bit where, you know, I'm going to shoot that 4-point.
Yep.
But to be able to find one and have the patience and focus on, I mean, that took a long time. That took a long time to be able to say, I'm going to let that deer walk. Because, I mean, you know how, and I don't want to say just Pennsylvania, but it's prevalent here and really a lot of other areas. If you don't shoot it, the neighbor will. And it's a tough thing to swallow, and everybody says they're not going to do it until it comes. And when it's there and you've got the shot, you got to take it. I mean, you could go all season and that might be the only deer you saw.
I get it. I mean, I've seen that both sides of it. I think there's a lot of factors come into play, like where are you hunting? What's the deer herd like? You know, what's the hunting pressure like? And what are your goals? Like, what do you want to accomplish? Like, I don't actively pursue shooting like a 2-year-old. Now, that said, the second to last day of rifle season in 2024 and the last day of rifle season in 2025, when I still had a buck tag in my pocket and a nice 2-year-old came up, that sucker was in trouble because I had an itchy trigger finger. Mm-hmm. And you know, I could have shot that caliber deer earlier in the year in both cases. But for me, what I found most fulfilling was continuing to hunt and just pursuing, but there comes a point where I want to shoot something, and it happened to be the end of rifle season, and that's when it happened. So I don't think there's anything wrong with, again, you know, Ron said it best when I had him on Hunt Your Hunt.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, I mean, I love that. I stick by that. I think any animal you can shoot is a trophy. It doesn't matter because it's not easy. I mean, whether you're rifle hunting at 200 yards or you're bow hunting at 10 yards, it's not easy. I mean, everybody sees it on TV or watches it on YouTube. What they don't see is the 900 other hours where you sat there and didn't see nothing, or you got busted, or somebody drove, the deer were coming in and the combine went by and drove the deer off. I mean, there's a lot to it. And like my best trophy, and people laugh at me for saying this, an armadillo. The thing I'm most proud of shooting is an armadillo.
Really?
Absolutely. I mean, how many people get a chance to shoot an armadillo with a bow in the first place?
That's a good question.
Me and my dad and brothers went on a hog hunt down in South Carolina. And, the first night we were there, we took out the rifles. I decided to leave the bow set. I took my younger brother Kevin out, and we sat on this pasture where the hogs were coming in, and we had night vision and all this stuff, and we were sitting there, and first time we had ever used night vision, and I'm on his left, he's on my right, and the hogs came in from our right, and there was three hogs, and we did everything perfect. We're going to count to three. On three, we shoot. What we didn't tell each other was which one are we shooting? Like, we had perfect plan, everything set up. I just assumed I'm shooting the one on the left and he's going to shoot one on the right. Well, we both shoot 1, 2, 3, perfect timing. Shots went off. I mean, synchronized. You couldn't get any better if you tried. And wouldn't you know, one hog drops. The other two hogs run off, and we look at each other, and I said, which hog did you shoot? I said, I shot my second one from my right. He said, I shot the second one from my left. I said, well, there were three hogs, so we're sitting there drawing on we're sitting behind a cattle fence, and we're drawing on the fence, and we're like, we just shot at the same damn hog. And I still swear to this day, we don't know who shot it, but I give him credit because I said, there's no way I took a rifle out and shot that for the first time in 10, 12 years and I hit something. I said, you've been shooting rifles. You got it. And we looked through that hog trying to find two bullet holes. We couldn't find a bullet hole for a while. We just thought maybe we scared the shit out of it. But that was a fun one. And then the next evening, they sat my dad. And my dad's not a big hunter. He'll go out and he'll do stuff with three of us boys. And he'll go out, you know, just for the camaraderie. And I felt bad because they took me down to a swamp. I had the bow, sat me down in this swamp. And it looked, I mean, perfect hog hunting. Just nasty, nasty, swampy water. And they sat him over a peanut field in this ground blind. It looked like it was raised ground blind up on a platform, leaned against a tree. And he looked like he was doing takeoff the whole time because the tree was leaning, the stand was leaning, and he was looking up over. And my other brother, he texted me and he goes, hey, he said, I don't think Dad's going to see anything. So he was about 600 yards from me. So I ran up the last hour and I said, hey, come down here with me. I got a ladder stand. We're going to sit in the ladder stand together. And we sat down there and a couple raccoons came in, a couple foxes. And I said, if you want to shoot something, go ahead and shoot it. He didn't want to shoot nothing. So we're walking up the hill. And as we're walking up the hill, we see the peanut field moving a little bit. And I got the green light on my bow and I got my headlamp on. He's got a flashlight and he's shining the flashlight around looking. He said, something's moving. I said, I know. And I right at that time, he's right in front of me and I drew back and he goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to shoot this. And I shot and arrow hit through the ground, jumped up and the lighted knock. It went probably 400 yards. Here comes this armadillo running past me and him, blood pouring out of it, ran right between us. Scared the crap out of us. He turns around, he looks, he goes, you just shot that freaking armadillo. I said, yeah, hopefully I hit him. And now there was blood pouring. And he turns around and starts running after it. I said, whoa, 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 don't run after it. I said, it might not be dead. It might be wounded and pissed. I said, you never know. I said, we don't have a lot of experience coming from Pennsylvania with armadillos. I said, it's going to be like a possum with a hard hat on it. He stuck his hand down and pulled this thing out. He goes, look at this sucker. Big old fat armadillo. And he's just shaking his head. He's hooting and hollering. And he was more excited than I was at that point in time just to see shooting something at night. And it was the armadillo.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, they're great. Funny because those two, I got my first taste of those last year in Oklahoma. And there's two things I learned. Mm. Number one, as dopey and slow as they move when you see them, they can take off like a bat out of heck when they get shot at. And number two, if you're not used to looking through thermals at night, an armadillo at 50 yards sometimes can really look like a hog at about 150 through a thermal.
Yep. Yeah. That was something else. That was fun. And we wound up, we only got one hog between the four of us that trip, but we got the armadillo and, we were all excited. I was going to get the thing mounted. We had called the taxidermist out the road down there, and he said, you really want that? He goes, I guess I could mount it. He said, I don't know, $300-$400. Okay, and we're sitting there arguing, is this worth it? And I text my wife, picture the armadillo, and she goes, what the hell is that? I said, it'd be real nice at the bottom of a lampshade. And she said, how much? I told her. She goes, oh, my God, no. She said, you are not getting that thing mounted. I said, but the chances of me ever doing that again are probably slim to none.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny, though, because those are it's stupid stuff like that you remember.
Well, the funny thing was my dad said it bounced off it. He said, they're like an army tank. It bounced off it. I said, it didn't bounce off it. I said, it hit the dirt and went. It bounced off the dirt.
You know, it's little stories like that that I think hold that much weight moving forward. Like, there's one story that has been told my entire life, and it's been told by my dad, my uncles, and my grandfather. And it was the story of my grandfather shooting a grouse. Now, that doesn't sound like a big deal, but the context is they went up hunting in turkey season, and they all had their shotguns in the fall, and they got cold and were sitting in the truck warming up, and they decided they were going to turn the truck around, forgetting where they put their guns, and he drove over the guns, and the one gun broke. Oh. So he gave my grandfather gave his shotgun to my dad. My dad gave his shotgun to his little brother. And one of the guys that was there, for some reason, had his shotgun turkey hunting, and he also had his .30-06 in their truck.
Ooh.
So they go out turkey hunting in the afternoon, and my grandfather takes a .30-06, and they used to walk for turkeys like a small game drive, and they just walk till they find turkeys and try to bust them up. And my dad said he was walking, and he heard my grandfather shooting. He's like, well, it has to be a turkey, and he doesn't see anything. And they walk out to one point, and he sees him like 100 yards away, and he holds his hand up. And here, he naturally, instinctively, when a grouse flushed up, he put the .30-06 up, and when he looked through the scope, he saw the grouse in the scope. So he pulled the trigger and shot a grouse flying with a .30-06. That is a story that always gets told. And it gets told more than any other deer I think I've ever heard a story about.
Oh, man. Yeah, there probably wasn't much left of that.
That I don't know. But I just know, like, you talking about your biggest trophy was a Dillo. Hey, I love shooting big bucks. I still like chasing big bucks, but there is definitely something to be said about the story involved and how that sticks more than the size of the deer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, another great one. And it seems like all the best stories that I have are from hog hunting down in South Carolina. My youngest brother, Alan, him and I went down, and I had gone down to this place probably four or five times, and I had shot probably eight or nine hogs. And he's like, I want to go. I want to take my AR and I want to go. Cause it's one of the few places that would let you shoot the AR. And, so we get there, and I had my bow, and I jumped up in the stand, and I 5 minutes of being there, a hog comes to the feeder. I shot it, called the guy. Cause it was middle of May. So it was pretty hot down there. It was about 90 degrees. He said, if you get one, call me right away. We'll come get it. We'll get it in the cooler. Well, as I called him, I hear the gator come flying around the field, and another hog comes to the feeder. I thought, man, I better get this shot off quick. So I shot that hog, heard it squeal. It ran into the woods about the same spot as the other one. He pulls up. I said, okay, we got two down. He goes, in 15 minutes, you got two hogs down with the bow. He said, I had, okay, whatever. So we go in the woods, and there they were laying 10 yards apart. We grabbed them, and there's still probably 3-4 hours of daylight left. And he goes, well, this was a three-hog hunt. He goes, are you going to try to do it all in a half hour, or are you going to go, what are you going to do now? I said, I know where my brother's sitting. I said, I'm going to go sneak up on him, get in the blind with him, because this is his first time not deer hunting in Pennsylvania. I said, so I want to like give him some pointers and see what's going on. And there we are sitting in this little Jiffy John, basically, sweating our asses off, and it's miserable, and the mosquitoes down there are the size of raccoons up here, and they're swarming, and it's just miserable. And I give him credit. The whole time he's sitting there looking through the scope of that gun, just staring at the feet or staring, waiting for him to come, and here come about 15, 20 hogs, and I'm looking, and I said, just let them come in, let them get comfortable, let them then pick out the one you want to shoot. And there were some real nice hogs in it. And the one, there was a real big black boar with nice teeth I could see, probably about 50, 60 yards out. And I'm telling him, I said, look, I said, shoot that one coming in from behind you. Shoot that one coming in from behind you. And he's not paying attention. And I'm not thinking, because as a bow hunter, I have full field of vision. So I'm seeing everything. I'm not thinking. He's looking through the scope. So he's only seeing like a third of what's going on. And finally, he goes, okay, I see it. And he shoots, and these hogs scatter. And we see this little mud puddle about a foot deep splashing with water. And we're looking at each other, and I said, they might come back. And he goes, I think I hit one. I said, I don't think you hit anything. I said, I don't know what was going on. And we're talking about this, and he's like, I didn't see the big one. I said, well, it was off to the right. And he goes, I was looking to the left. And I still can't figure out how he can't see this. And then I pick up his gun, I'm looking at the scope, I'm like, okay, I see. So we start walking up to the feeder, and if this hog was 10 pounds, he was overweight. I mean, we pulled this thing out of the mud puddle, he held it up with one hand, and I guarantee it wasn't the size of a grouse that you're talking about.
Oh my gosh.
And he's looking there, and I said, all right. I said, I don't know how we're going to make this pitcher look good. I said, if you get way back, like way back at defense row, and I lean way back, we'll get you a good picture here. It was the smallest freaking hog. And he said, what are we going to do with it? I said, well, we get home, we'll throw it on the fire, and we can make two sandwiches. But he was happy as all get out with that because it was the first hog that he had shot. And then after I showed him the video, because I was filming, he saw the whole herd and he was a little disgusted. But I said, would you be more happy with that and the story than a big old fat hog that we're going to forget about anyway?
Well, in the moment, probably not. But now he probably did.
Right. Right.
Dan, this is.
Yeah, I got called a couple four-letter words.
Oh, I'm
for that
sure
one,
you
but...
did. Well, Dan, this has been a fun conversation. I love the stories. I love the perspective. It was fun to talk with you and have you on. Man, you said you're on Mason-Dixon Adventures. Where can people follow along and see what you're doing, whether it's filming or social or whatever?
Yeah, Mason-Dixon Adventures on Instagram and Mason-Dixon Adventures on YouTube. And I also hear, I didn't get a chance to tell you, last year I became a licensed taxidermist. So I've been cleaning skulls, doing European mounts for people. I haven't got into doing shoulder mounts and anything yet. I need to work under somebody to fine tune that. But actually did about 35 skulls last year and, looking to do a little bit more this year.
Very cool. Well, guys, check out Dan. And Dan, it was a pleasure having you on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I love talking to you.